We are holding on some Hey Omades, about 10 lines from the bottom. Tonnerre Abbondanzino, 9 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about a case with a mortar that's used for grinding spices or small quantities of grain. So the Mishnah had said that when you sell a house, then if you have a mortar attached to the ground, then it's automatically sold with the house. But if it's not attached to the ground, then not. In the Gemara, we learned a braisa that made a different distinction. It's not so much whether it's attached to the ground, it's whether it's carved out, meaning, in other words, like the Rashbam had said, let's say that you have a stone sticking out of the wall or out of the ground, and you carve which is naturally there, and then you carved a mortar out of it. So then it would be sold with the house. But on the other hand, if it was a regular mortar that was later on attached to the ground, then according to that braisa, it wouldn't be sold with the house because it's not because the fact is it was detached from the ground at some point, and therefore it's not considered something that's therefore it's not considered something fixed in place. There is, by the way, I didn't mention yesterday, the Ravid has an interesting explanation of it, that the chukka that it said that is sold with the house would be where there's an actual space for it. That's the not that the mortar itself has been hollowed out of a rock like the Rashbam says, but rather that there's a space hollowed out for it to sit in permanently, as opposed to kvur would just be where it's sitting on the would just be that it's, it would, so kvur the other way around, chakuka would mean that it's that you have a space carved out for it to sit in, but it's not actually attached there with mortar. Kvur would be that it's attached with mortar. Whatever the case, the point is we made that distinction between whether it's fixed in place or not. So now that leads the Gemara into a discussion about the status of things that were originally separate from the ground and now are attached to it in terms of other din. So the Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, Sinur shachakoker l'vasoif kvoi." If you have a pipe that you first hollowed out, you first carved out or hollowed out or shaped, or l'vasoif kvoi, and later on you attached it to the ground. And now, if you have water going through that pipe into the mikveh, then it's going to make the mikveh possible. Now we know that a mikveh is possible if the water that constitutes it is shuvin, if it's drawn water, as we're going to discuss later in the sugya in a little more detail. The point would be, in other words, that you can't have the water go through a cave. So here, the pipe would be considered a cavy. Now, there's some discussion about that, because a pipe, on the face of it, if we're talking about that it's open at both ends, why would it pass a mikveh? So the Rashbam just says generically, we're talking about exactly that. We're talking about a pipe, and then so we're saying that if it was first shaped to be a pipe, and then you were to pass the water through it, then it would be possible. So Tosfos has some discussion about it. First of all, what material is it made out of? Because that affects the question of whether it's mekabel tumah. And you also have, but there's also, are we actually talking about a pipe? And in fact, though, so Tosfos says we could maybe be talking about not so much a pipe, but rather it's more like a board that has sides to it. So imagine, like, for example, you take like a flat board and you attach pieces of wood to it or something, so that it has so it's a it has a receptacle. So now it's like it's a very shallow dish. Well, then for sure it's mekabel tumah. So are we talking about something like that? Tosfos says maybe you could understand it that way, but you could also say, even you're talking about an actual pipe, you're going to say, why is that a keli? The water just goes in and goes out the other end, because you're talking about, let's say, that the pipe has now you have as you have water going through a pipe, inevitably you're going to have sediment that goes with it, and eventually that can block the pipe. So sometimes you have a pipe built with a trap in it where the sediment and whatever else is dissolves in the water over there will settle out into that trap, into that hollowed out space that's wider in the middle of the pipe. And then the rest of the water will flow through. Well, now it has a pli kibble. Now then it has a receptacle, because that little area of the trap in it is now considered a receptacle. So we can be talking about that. So there's several different opinions among Rishonim about what type of pipe we're talking about over here. But the point is that it's the type of pipe where it's going to be considered a keli, and it's going to be makabel tumah, and therefore you can't use it for having the water for the mikvah flow through it. We're saying so if it was first shaped into a pipe or into a pipe with a trap or whatever, and then you attached it, even though later on you attached it to the ground, and you would say once it's attached to the ground, it's not a keli, but it's too late because it's already considered a keli from before that. On the other hand, but if it was the other way around, if first you attached it to the ground and then you shaped it into a pipe, or then you carved out the trap in it, etc. So then it's like the equivalent that Ashbam says, like as if you made a channel on the ground, as if you dug a channel on the ground, and that's not a keli in the first place, and therefore that would be fine. Ain't a poselos a mikveh? Now the water for the mikveh can flow through it and not have a problem. When it comes to mikvahs, nowadays, also, for example, so you have, if the pipe has a trap in it, then as we're saying over here, you're going to have a problem. Even if the pipe doesn't have a trap, but if the pipe has bends in it, there are poskim who say there can be issues with it, and therefore, as much as possible, they try to have nowadays, when they build mikvahs and they have pipes leading up to the roof for the rainwater to fall in, and then to be able to go down into the mikveh for every so often when they change the rainwater, they try to have that those pipes shouldn't have bends in them in order to satisfy these requirements over here. An interesting thing in connection with this kvoil, the Sef HaKokoi, or the other way around, comes up with an engineering design that the Alter Rebbe came up with as far as the kvois. In the last few hundred years, Poskim dealt with the question, how can we make a mikveh that will be heated? In the times of the Gemara, there were no such things as heated mikvahs. You went to the mikveh, you went in cold water. If you really need it on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol needs tovel five times. If he's old or he's sick, then they had to have some kind of method. In Masechta Yoma, it talks about they'd have to put in hot bars of metal into red hot bottle bars of metal into the water, and the heat from them would transfer into the water, and it would get at least a little bit warm. Or they had different methods like that. But in general, mikvahs were cold. In Eastern Europe, that was a problem for women who have to tovel once a month. It was very hard for them. So Poskim looked for different ways to be able to heat them. So one thing they came up with at one point was the idea. So you make like a sort of like a barrel. And you make holes in it large enough that it's not considered a keli anymore, and then you can fill that up with hot water and immerse it in the river or whatever, and then the woman can go in there. So that way, the water will be leaking out very fast, of course, but at least it'll be long enough, it'll be warm enough, long enough for her to tovel. The problem is that's toveling in a keli, and you can't do that. So the Alter Rebbe came up with a method based on this Gemara. We also learned about it in Bava Kamma. About this kvoil v'sof chakoka and chakoka v'sof kvoi business. Basically, the Alter Rebbe's solution was to build that barrel or box type of thing, but to build it in such a way that to begin with, it never actually becomes a keli until it's attached to the ground. So it's a whole complicated thing. But the gist of it was that you'd have first it's attached to the ground, and only then is it built up as a keli. And that way, by the time it becomes a keli, it's attached to the ground, and therefore, as we're saying over here, it never becomes a keli in the first place. And then again, the idea is you fill that up with hot water, it has holes in it large enough to be connected to the rest of the water of the river, so fine, the hot water won't stay in there for any length of time, but it's long enough for her to be able to tovel. To be able to tovel comfortably. And the poskim were in general very much in favor of that takana. In fact, the Alter Rebbe himself considered it one of his great schosim that he made that takana. Later on, as technology developed, they didn't need that kind of thing anymore. Nowadays, we're able to have mikvahs that are heated more directly. Anyway, but that's an example of this kind of thing where there's a difference between whether it was a keli that then was attached to the ground or whether it never started out as a keli until it was attached to the ground. Anyway, so the Gemara says, given this braisa, so again, the braisa is distinguishing between whether it was a keli before it was attached to the ground or whether it became one only afterwards. Well, the Gemara says, mani. So who does this braisa go like? Lo Rabbi Eliezer v'lo Rabbi Banan. On the face of it, it seems to be not like Rabbi Eliezer and not like the Chachamim. Well, okay, hey, Rabbi. Hey, Rabbi Eliezer. Well, where do we see? What statement of Rabbi Eliezer do we see that would bear on that, where Rabbi Eliezer would seem to not hold of such a distinction that the Braisa does between whether it was attached to begin with or whether not? And for that matter, Rashbam says the Gemara could also ask which statement of the Chachamim do we see to the contrary, but the Gemara doesn't want to go into such an arichos, so it just says which statement of Rabbi Eliezer, and we understand, in other words, it means which statements of Rabbi Eliezer and of the Chachamim do we find that bear on this. Ilema Rabbi Eliezer de Bayis, so you're going to say Rabbi Eliezer's statement in connection with the house, what we just learned yesterday and what we just reviewed now about this case with the mortar attached to the ground, where we said that on Mishnah, that just distinguishes between whether it's attached or not, goes according to Rabbi Eliezer, and then the Braisa that had further distinguished between how it's attached, whether it's naturally attached to begin with or whether it's attached afterwards, we said was not according to, we said that was not according to Rabbi Eliezer. Which in that case, Tosfos points out, we would have two separate sets of the Chachamim. Well, so actually the Rashbam points out we would have two different sets of Chachamim over here. We would have the Chachamim who disagree with him in connection with the mortar, and then we'd have the Chachamim who maybe disagree with it, who potentially disagree with him as far as the pipe for the mikveh. The point being, in other words, because the Chachamim, we said, make a distinction not just between whether it's attached to the ground now or not, but whether it was ever detached from the ground, whereby the mikveh, you don't have that. The Rashbam says you don't really, I mean, not the Rashbam, Tosfos says, the Ri says in Tosfos, you don't really need that. You don't really need that. We could say that's one set of Chachamim, and in fact that we're saying that when we talk about the mortar being chakuka, do we mean that it's do we mean, like he said, that it's attached to the ground to begin with, or could it mean even, for example, that it was attached to the ground later on? Whatever. The point is, in other words, that if you're going to say that machlokas bears on this one as far as the mikveh, and you're going to say, well, Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that there's a distinction between whether the mortar was attached to the ground or not, is going to be so therefore, he would also, in other words, he would say once the mortar is attached to the ground, that it becomes part of the ground. Well, the same thing, in other words, you would say that the pipe, then the same way, even if it was first made into a pipe and made with the trap and all of that, and later on attached to the ground, you could say now it's no longer a keli because it's attached to the ground, and therefore you wouldn't have, and therefore it wouldn't be an issue with the mikveh, and therefore we would say the Braisa does not agree with that, the Braisa doesn't agree with that concept, and therefore the Braisa wouldn't be like Rabbi Eliezer, it would have to be like the Chachamim. So are you going to say that? The problem with that is, Dilma Hainu Taima, the Rabbi Eliezer, that the reason could be Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that you sell the mortar as when it's attached to the ground, maybe not based on the question of whether it's still considered a keli or not, but like we've learned previously, whether mocha ba'ayin yofa mocha, you're selling generously, but Rabbanan Sabri mocha ba'ayin ra mocha, on the chachamim hold that you're trying to reserve for yourself as much as possible, like we learned previously, as far as easements and whatever. So maybe Rabbi Eliezer would say, sure, it's considered a keli, but now that it's attached to the ground, then fine, mocha ba'ayin yofa mocha, so he includes it. And the Chum would say that no, it's still mocha ba'ayin ra mocha, so that doesn't necessarily bear on the question of whether it would be considered a keli as far as the dinim of mikra. So when we say that Braisa seems to not be like Rabbi Eliezer or like the Chachamim, not necessarily. Maybe it is like either one of them, and only by the case of the mortar in the house do they have different reasons to say they're dinim otherwise. So the Gemara says, you're right. So maybe you're talking about Rabbi Eliezer's opinion and the Chachamim will disagree with him when it comes to a beehive, where we would say that you can see that Rabbi Eliezer holds that a beehive that's attached to the ground, it's considered like the ground. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Shavuos, it's also, I think, in Masechta Uktzin, Kaveres Dvorim, a beehive, Rabbi Eliezer says it's considered like the ground. We're talking about, in other words, again, we're talking about this beehive is attached to the ground. A typical beehive would be You'd have a basket or a box or something like that that you would have space in it for the bees to come and put together their honeycombs and put their honey in it. So now such a thing might well be attached to the ground. So Rabbi says it's considered like karka in the sense that Ashbam says that, for example, that's acquired with kesef or shtar or chazaka, like we learned in Masechta Kiddushin, unlike metalpelin that are acquired in other ways. It would mean that you could do kinyan agav with it. You could say, I'm makne to you this beehive, and together with it, I'm makne to you some metalpelin, even if the metalpelin are located elsewhere, and that would work with halacha. So it's considered a karka. It's considered karka as far as all those things, says Rabbi Eliezer. And the kosvinale are prusbal. Furthermore, it's considered like karka even to the extent that you could write a prusbal based on it. As we learned in Masechta Gittin, and as we know, we have every time before and after Shemitah, you have a prusbal that you declare that any of your outstanding debts that people owe you are transferred to Beis Din to collect. And that was a takana of Hillel Hazaken, so that people are not reluctant to lend each other money. A person is going to lend somebody else money and is going to think, well, wait, I can't, after Shemitah, comes Shemitah, the loan's going to be gone, so I don't want to lend him in the first place. And the Torah warns us in this week's parasha, don't do that. That would be a wicked thing to do, to not lend a fellow Yid money. So in Hillel's times, he saw this was becoming a prevalent problem, that people were not wanting to lend money because of this. So therefore, and they're being over what it says in the Torah, say he made the takana of prusbal. We learned in Masechta Gittin, the mechanism by which it works. There's machlokas in the Gemara about, is it that since nowadays Shemitah is only Dirabbanan, it's not all the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, then the Chachamim are able to override it with the takana, in which case it wouldn't work when Mashiach comes and all the Jewish people are back in Eretz Yisrael. Or the other way of looking at it is it would work even then, because Hefker based in Hefker. Anyway, the point is, part of the takana was, in order to write a prusbal, the loiva has to have, the borrower has to have some land. And the Rashbam explains there's a couple of reasons. There's a couple of reasons behind that. One of them is because when he has land, then to that extent it can be considered, then there's a shibud on the land, therefore it can be considered as though the loan in a sense was already collected, and therefore it's possible to be able to collect it in practice after Shemitah, because in principle you have already a shibud on the land before. And then the Rashbam says that I learned from my grandfather, which is Rashi, that the reason is because usually you don't lend somebody money unless he has karka in the first place, and the Chachamim usually, when they make their takanas, they only make them in the common situation. Whatever the case, the point is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying not only is a beehive that's attached to the ground considered like karka insofar as that you acquire it with kesef, shtar, chazaka, etc., but even that you could use it as a basis for writing a prusbal. You could argue that Ashbam says that maybe you would think otherwise, that maybe a malva doesn't think about a beehive as karka to the extent that he should be willing to lend money on that basis, so that should be a basis for a prusbal. Note, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you can't. Tosfos actually brings up a point that maybe based on the continuation of the Gemara, maybe even in the end we're going to say Rabbi Eliezer doesn't require it to actually be attached to the ground. Maybe even if it's sitting on the ground on pegs, then it may, Rabbi Eliezer might still consider it like land, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain in a minute. Anyway, he continues, "Ve'en makabelas tuma b'makoma." The beehive, because it's considered like karka, it's not makabel tumah when it's in its place. It's attached to the ground, so therefore it's no longer a keli. And the Rashbam adds the honey inside it wouldn't be makabel tumah either, because it's bottled to the honey, and because it's bottled to the beehive. Now, only b'mekoima, if you actually picked it up from there, then it would be makabel. Then not only the beehive would be makabel tumah maybe, but in any case, the beehive maybe it wouldn't, based on what the Gemara is going to say soon. But the honey, at any rate, would be makabel tumah once you move the beehive. The Rashbam refers to something that we're going to learn in the next perek, that honey may be something that is makabel tumah right away without even needing to think about whether you're going to use it as food, because automatically it's a food. We're going to discuss that, and we're going to learn that point in the next parak in a couple of weeks, Bez Hashem. Tosfos adds another detail. When we say makabelas tumah b'makoma, what we can mean is it's makabel tumah at that point only did Abban. that once you move it, so then it's very similar to other kalim in the house, so it might easily be confused with them. So therefore, the chachamim would say it's makabel tuma, even if Rabbi Eliezer holds on a daraisa level, it wouldn't be makabel tuma. Anyway, v'haroidim emene b'shabbos chayev chatas, and Rabbi Eliezer says another detail. Because a beehive is considered like the ground, says Rabbi Eliezer, therefore, if a person were to remove honey from it on Shabbos, then he would be chayev as if like he's detaching something from the ground. The same way as a person picks a fruit or a vegetable on Shabbos, he's chayev for the malacha of toilish, which is a tolda of the malacha of koitzer, of harvesting. The same way Rabbi Eliezer says, harvesting honey from the hive, because the hive is considered like the ground, then you would have the same din. So we see so far that Rabbi Eliezer says, even this beehive, it wasn't to begin with attached to the ground. It was originally a separate keli, and later on you mortared it to the ground. And Rabbi Eliezer considers it like karka. So therefore, the braisa about the pipe with the mikveh apparently would not be like him, because if it was like him, then we would say it wouldn't matter whether the pipe was shaped first and then attached to the ground, or the other way around. Either way, once it's attached it to the ground, it wouldn't be a keli anymore. And the Chum disagree. They say, no, a beehive like that is not like land. It's rather like metalplin. So you want to acquire it, you're going to need meshicha or hagba or any of the other usual, you're going to use any of the usual methods of acquiring metalplin. The ein kost min alei pruzbol, you can't use it as a basis for writing a pruzbol, because again, the loiva has to have karka for that purpose, and this isn't considered karka. Umkabelas tuma, and is makabel tuma makabelas tuma b'makoyma, and it's makabel tuma where it's located, meaning even if it's still attached to the ground right now, it's still makabel tuma because it's not considered like the ground, even though it's attached. V'aroidim emene b'shabbos potter, and if a person takes honey from it on Shabbos, he would be potter from a chatas. It's also derabanan, but it wouldn't be considered like harvesting on Shabbos. So the bottom line is that. So we would say when we had the braisa before that distinguished as far as the pipe, whether it was first a pipe and then attached to the ground or the other way around, it wouldn't be like Rabbi Eliezer. And on the face of it, it would have to be like a chachamim that even after it's attached to the ground, it still remains a keli. So they would say, Mela, you attached it to the ground first before it ever became a keli, and then you carved it out and shaped it to make it a keli. Then we could say, okay, well, it never became a keli till it was attached to the ground, so therefore fine. But so we would have to say, so on the face of it, then we would say that braisa is like the chachamim and not like Rabbi Eliezer. The Ritva actually says that maybe actually the chachamim, where we see in the braisa over here, as far as the beehive, we see the chachamim don't distinguish between whether it was shaped first and then attached, or attached first and then shaped. So maybe the Gemara is saying that the braisa about the mikveh wouldn't, about the pipe with the mikveh wouldn't be even according to the chachamim. Whatever the case, are we going to say that this machloikas about the beehive bears on that? The Gemara says no. Hasim k'd'amar Rabbi Elazar. No, because you could say in the case of the beehive, the reason for Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is not based on that he holds in general that anything attached to the ground becomes like the ground, but rather a specific thing that Rabbi Elazer said to explain Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Rabbi Elazer, you have two Rabbi Elazers, Stam and Shas, you have Rabbi Elazer, Atana, and Rabbi Elazer on Amora. Here we're talking about Rabbi Elazer the Amora, the famous Rabbi Elazer ben Pedos, the Talmud of Rabbi Yechanan. Anyway. So he says, "Da'amar Rabbi Elazar, my time of the Rabbi Eliezer. Why does Rabbi Eliezer hold that the beehive is considered like karka and not makabel tuma, etc.? Not because in general things that are attached to the ground are considered like the ground, but dichtiv, we find a pasuk that expresses the point that honey in a beehive is considered like the karka." You have the background of this pasuk that Gemara is going to quote is the psukim are describing in Shmuel and Sefer Shmuel that you had at one point Shoal and the Jewish people are fighting against the Plishtim. Shoal gives out an order that everybody should fast today in order to ask Hashem for Rachmanus that we should be able to beat the Plishtim. So everybody's fasting, and meanwhile, Yonasan, Shoal's eldest son, had been away from the rest of the army. The whole story over there, how he and his arms bearer had gone first and done a surprise sneak attack on the Plishtim, and that confused them, and now the Jewish people had all joined the battle, but Yonasan wasn't around to hear what Shoal had said. Well, they're going through the forest over there, the pasuk describes, and Yonasan was extremely hungry, so much so the Gemara tells us in Yoma he was suffering from bulmus, which is a condition where a person like is feeling very weak and can't see well because he hasn't had food, so I guess like low blood sugar or something like that. Then he sees some honey flowing on the ground. Honey, or here the Gemara is understanding that it's honey. Rashi on the pasuk says it may have been sugar flowing from sugar cane. Whatever the case, nobody else was going to taste it because everybody else had heard Shaul saying that you have to fast. Yonasan, who hadn't heard, took his walking stick and dipped it. The Gemara quotes the pasuk over here. Vayipol oisa b'yaras advash. He took his walking stick, his walking staff, and dipped the end of it into the forest of honey, meaning again, either either there was a flow of honey that had flowed out of a beehive, or there was sugar cane that had melted, or there was sugar that had melted out of sugar cane that was growing there. Whatever, he stuck the end of his walking staff into that and took some of it and put it in his mouth, and that got rid of his hunger pangs and strengthened. People are telling him, your father said no, and Yonasan says, you know what, I don't think that was right in the first place, but we have to be strong in order to fight the Plishtim, whatever. The Pasuk continues with the whole details of the story. The point is that we see the Pasuk calls it Yaras Advash, which literally means the forest of honey. So Rabbi Eliezer says, my Yar. We learn from that, just like with a forest, if a person were to pick a branch or something from a forest on Shabbos, he would be chayev chatas for the malacha of kotzer. The same way, when it comes to honey, a person removes honey from a honeycomb on Shabbos, then he would be chayev chatas, and therefore, so we see from that, says Rabbi Eliezer, that the hive is considered like the ground, and therefore we can deduce from it, says Rabbi Eliezer, all the other dinim that it's considered like karka as far as how you coin it, and then you can write a prusbel based on it, etc., etc. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer's din, in the case of the beehive, may not have anything to do with that in general he holds things attached to the ground are considered like the ground. It may be a din specific to a beehive based on his limud from this pasuk. By the way, of course, you know, you can't learn halachas from Nevi'im, but here, Rabbi Eliezer says, it's not so much a halacha as we see. The description over there tells us, in other words, it illuminates for us what a beehive is considered. Anyway, so you can't say, therefore, again, that the braisa about the pipe with the mikveh has anything to do with this case with the beehive. And once we say this, as Tosfos points out before, then Rabbi Eliezer might well say that it doesn't really matter whether the beehive is attached to the ground or not. Either way, a beehive, in his view, is considered like the ground because based on this pasuk. Okay. So the Gemara says, Elo Rabbi Eliezer de Daf. Rather, we can say maybe that the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer and of the Chachamim that bear on the question as far as the pipe with the mikveh is Rabbi Eliezer's and the Chachamim's opinion when it comes to a board. The Tanan, we learn it now. Now you have like this. When it comes to wooden keli, midaraisa, a flat wooden keli is not makabel tuma. It has to have a base kibble. It has to have a receptacle in it. So the Gemara is going to assume at this point that the board we're talking about is a wooden board. Later on, the Gemara is going to revisit that point. Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, Dafshan in Masech Kalim, Dafshanach Toimin, if you have a board used by bakers, the Rashbam gives two possibilities. One is that it means that he uses this board to knead the dough on. And the other possibility that Rashbam prefers the explanation, that it's a board that he uses as a counter to display the bread for sale. So this board, it's a flat wooden board. On the face of it, it shouldn't be makabel tuma. Shekvoi bakoisel. And now he attached it to the wall. Rabbi Eliezer says it's not makabel tuma anymore because now it's attached to the ground and things attached to the ground in general are not makabel tuma. B'cham matamin, whereas the Chum would say that it's still makabel tuma because it's not bottle to the ground. So now, again, when it comes to the same way as we said before with a pipe, where only once it's shaped into a pipe, or according to Tosfos, only when you carve out the crack, the wider area in it, In the middle of it, that the sediment and whatever will get trapped in, only then does it become a keli. In the same vein, when it comes to a wooden board, when does it become a kaylee, a plain wooden board, such as you might have, you saw a log into boards, is not makabel tuma yet. It has to be finished. And the finishing of it usually is that you sand, you plane it, you sand it, smooth it, whatever. So now, but the braisa is not distinguishing between whether you did that before you attached it to the wall or not. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that no, once attached to the wall, then that's it. It's considered like the karka, and the chachamim are going to say that there's a, that it doesn't matter. It still remains a kaylee. So again, then it seems that so now we can say that the braisa about the so what you see, in other words, neither Rabbi Eliezer nor the chachamim are distinguishing as far as the board between whether it became a board that can be considered a kaylee at all before or after it was attached to the wall. So now we can ask Mani. So now we can go back to the braisa about the pipe and the mikveh, and we can ask which of these two opinions is it like Rabbi Eliezer. If it went like Rabbi Eliezer, can't I feel a chakokoy love safe fly on the face of it? Rabbi Eliezer, when it comes to the board that's used by the baker over here, is not distinguishing between whether it was smoothed and planed before you attached it to the wall or not. So therefore, by the same logic, Rabbi Eliezer should say, once the pipe is attached to the ground, it's no longer a keli, even if it was shaped and even if the trap in it was made before you attached it. And according to the Chachamim, they also don't make that distinction. They hold the board is always still makabel tuma, even though now it's attached to the ground. By the same logic, they should say it doesn't matter whether the pipe was first shaped and then attached, or the other way around. Either way, they would consider it a keli. So now, when we said on Samachay Amud Beis, when we quoted the Braisa about the pipe, and we said, who does it go like? Now we understand what the Gemara means, that who does it go like, which of the two opinions here, as far as this doctrine, shall not claim in, does it fit? So the answer is, lo'olam Rabbi Eliezer. You could answer that after all, the braisa, as far as the height, is like Rabbi Eliezer. Because the difference is that the whole concept that flat wooden kalim that don't have a receptacle should be makabel tuma is only dirabana. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is going to say the whole concept, even when the board is detached, it's only makabel tuma dirabana. So therefore, he's going to say once you attach it to the wall, then I'm going to be makel, and I'm going to say it's considered like part of the ground. But when it comes to a pipe and water, that drawn water, that water that passes through a keli, passels a mikveh, that would be, the Gemara's understanding at this point, is daraisa. So you can't be makel with that. Now, the Rashbam does point out, though, one thing you have to consider in that regard is that this board, if it's a flat wooden board, why would it be makabel tuma anyway? Even did a bun on a flat wooden board won't be makabel tuma. So the Rashbam says it has to be that it's roi l'midras. We know, as we have in Mishnayos, that we learn for the 11 months and for a yard site, shlosha trisin hein. We have throughout that perek over there that certain things are makabel tumas midras. They're able to become tame by a zav sitting or stepping or otherwise leaning his body weight on it, lying on it or whatever. But it has to be that it's something made for the purpose, and not just usable for that purpose, but made for the purpose. We know the general rule is that if it's something where we would tell the Zav, Amoid v'nasim alachtenu, get up, we need to use this thing for some other purpose, then it's not makabel tumas midras. Well, the Rashbam says, so here we have to be talking about that even though this board is being used by the baker to knead his dough or to display his bread for sale, it's also something that is equally well usable as a bed to lie on, and therefore it can be makabel tumas midras, and therefore that's what we'd be talking about. Tosfos has a long discussion about that and says maybe another way you could. First of all, the Gemara is going to end up saying that we're not talking about a wooden board. The Gemara is going to end up we're talking about a metal board, and those have different dinim. But anyway, Tosfos points out that actually, no, you don't even need that. Even if it's not makabel tumas midras, even if it is the kind of thing where if a zav were to sit or lie on it, we would right away tell him to get up. Nevertheless, it can still be makabel tumas d'rabbanan because it's something that's used that's used regularly by people. The baker is using it for his dough or for his bread, and therefore that would be reason enough. Maybe Daraisa, it wouldn't be Makabel Tuma, but at least Dirabanan. In any case, the point is that the Gemara is saying, since the fact that Makabel Tuma is only Dirabanan, then therefore the same Chachamim can be Makel, says Rabbi Eliezer, and say that once it's attached to the wall, then it's not Makabel Tuma. Well, therefore, so Rabbi Eliezer might say, so in that case, where it's only Makabel Tuma Dirabanan, but when it comes to a pipe, that had, however we define what the issue with the pipe is, that would pass the mikveh daraisa because the water is passing through a keli, then we would say the only way it can be kosher would be if it was never a keli until it was attached to the ground, because then that would be the equivalent of digging a channel in the ground for the water. Well, the Gemara says, miklal, well, it comes out by implication of that answer, it means the shiva daraisa, evidently the concept that mayim shuvim Hassel and Mikveh would be Daraisa. And therefore, that would be the implication why Rabbi Yezer is saying that therefore you can't be Mako on that. Now, when we talk about Shu'uvim, we're talking about those two different issues with Mayim Shu'uvim when it comes to a Mikveh. And the Rashbam and Tosfos and other Rishonim have a lot of discussion what exactly, what issue of Shu'uvim are we talking about. Now, you have like this. Conceivably, a Mikveh could be made all out of Mayim Shu'uvim. You could conceivably take 40 saw of water in buckets and use it to fill up a mikveh. And is it that the Gemara is saying that such a thing, well, first of all, the Gemara is going to point out in a second that such a thing that's actually only possible dirabanan. So do we mean that at a daraisa level, you would actually be able to fill up a mikveh with buckets and it's only dirabanan that such a thing is possible? Or what we mean is maybe the fact that you have a separate din, which we learn again in the Mishnayos for a Yortzeit, when we're the second part of the Mishnayos, Yesh Ma'alon as a mikveh, a lot of it is based on the issue that three logim of Mayim Shuvim passel a mikveh. Meaning, in other words, you have a kosher, you have a mikveh that doesn't quite have 40 saw yet, and three logim of Mayim Shuvim fall into it, then as the Gemara is saying over here, it's Midrabanan, the whole mikveh is possible, and you would have to drain out the whole thing and refill it with rain. So whatever the case, it sounds like Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the psul of Shu'uvim, however we define that, and Tosfos had a long discussion about this that extends well onto the next Amud, about this whole issue, what issue exactly of Shu'uvim is Daraisa and which one is Dirabanan. Anyway, it sounds like he's saying the issue of Shu'uvim is a psul, it makes a mikveh psul Daraisa, and therefore he's saying you can't be makel on it, but you could be makel when it comes to the wooden board that's used by the baker. Well, if you're going to say the problem with that is Varkai Malon Dirabanan, but we know for a fact that that psul is only Dirabanan. So again, that can mean. So the Rashbam learns that what we mean is that to make a mikveh out of completely drawn water would be posel daraisa. And the Gemara is saying that actually, when the Gemara says over here dirabanan, it means the psul of three logim. The fact that if three logim of mayim shuvim falls in, that would be psul dirabanan. And then Tosfos discusses and says that the re hold that no, even if a mikveh was made out of entirely drawn water, you were to fill up with buckets, even that would be psul only dirabanan. And then there are several other opinions of Rishonim about details about the David would hold that, for example, you can have a case where a mikveh was made through kalim, but not that a person actually picked up the kalim and poured it into the mikveh, but let's say that water fell into the kalim by themselves. Imagine, for example, let's say you have kalim near a mikveh, rain fell into the kalim, and then the kalim on their own tipped over and fell into the mikveh. The raivad would hold that kind of thing is dirabanan. Whereas if you actually filled it up with buckets and poured it into the mikveh, then it would be posel daraisa. And there are several different opinions about that. In any case, the point is that we see that the issue of shuvim, that would be a problem with the pipe, is only dirabanan. So why shouldn't Rabbi Eliezer be makel with that just as much as he's makel when it comes to the wooden board? Same thing as that's Makabel Tuma Dirabanan, the same way with the pipe. The issue of Mayim Shuvim going into this mikveh is also Dirabanan. The oid, not only that, Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina says that You want to say, even the Rashbam says, maybe the Chachamim are make, or maybe the Chachamim are machmir when it comes to the pipe, even though the concept of Shuvim in this case would be Dirabbanon, maybe the Chachamim are machmir, and it as though it was Daraisa, but never mind that. Our whole assumption was based on the idea that the Daf Shel Nachtoimim is made out of wood, and it's Makabel Tuma only Dirabbanon, but in fact, Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina tells us, the Machloikas is a board that's made out of metal. Well, metal is a whole other matter. Metal is Makabel Tuma Daraisa. A keli of metal is Makabel Tuma Daraisa, whether it's flat or whether it has a receptacle. And the reason is that Rashbam explains wooden kelim, the Torah puts them in the same category as a sack. And a sack has a receptacle to it. So therefore, we learn from that a wooden keli in general, to be Makabel Tuma, has to have a receptacle. As opposed to a metal kelim, you don't have that. So once we have that, then, so if the case of the Daf Shel Nachtoimim is made out of metal, and Rabbi Eliezer is saying that even though it's metal and it's Mekabel Tumah, once it's attached to the ground, he says it loses the status of a keli and becomes part of the ground. Well, then, according to him, in the case of the pipe by the mikveh also, who cares if it was a keli first and then you attached it to the ground? It should still be, it's now bottled to the ground. And yet the Braisa says that it passes the mikveh when the water flows through it. Well, there we go then. So we have a problem that that Braisa. So here we're saying we thought that we could make the Braisa work like Rabbi Eliezer, but we're saying that no, based on what Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina is telling us, then no, it doesn't. Fact is that Rabbi Eliezer, we see by the Daf Shel Nachtoimim, hold that any keli, even a full-fledged metal keli, becomes bottle when it's attached to the ground. Well, then why is he saying by the pipe that if it was first shaped and then attached to the ground, that it should pass all the mikveh when the water goes through it? So the Gemara says, okay, so you could say like this, Lo'olam Rabbanan hi, or Ela, or there are Rishonim, Rabbi Gershom, and several, and the Rashbam, and several other Rishonim have the Girsa Ela over here in the Gemara. That Ela, the Gemara is saying, you're right, we have to change our mind, Lo'olam Rabbanan. In fact, the Braisa, as far as the pipe, would be according to the Chachamim. You're right. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it wouldn't matter whether the pipe was first constructed and then attached to the ground or the other way around. Either way, Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's fine because it's bottled to the ground. But that Brai says, as far as the pipe is according to the Chachamim, the shiny Sheva Drabbanan. So exactly that, because the whole issue of Mayim Shu'uvim with a mikveh is only Drabbanan. Again, subject to that machlokas rishonim, what exactly we mean, which psul we're talking about, the filling of the entire mikveh or the three lugim coming into it afterwards, as the case may be. Since that issue was only dirabanan, then therefore the chum are going to say that fine, if the pipe was never a keli until it was attached to the ground, then we're not going to extend the din of the din dirabanan to the extent of passing. As opposed to the Daf Shel Nachtoimim. Again, it's a metal board. It's Makabel Tuma Daraisa. So therefore, we're going to say the Chum say that even you attached it to the ground doesn't take away its status. Well, the question is, well, if you're going to say that the Chum Mekel by the pipe, by the mikveh, because it's now attached to the ground, then what's the difference? Whether it was first shaped and then attached to the ground or the other way around? The answer is, Shiny Hasim Deka Torus Kliola Batolush. Because the Chacham would say, listen, after all, if it was first shaped, it was considered a keli before it was attached to the ground. And now, afterwards, you attached it. So therefore, the Chacham are going to say, fine, we're not going to go to that extent and be makel to that, and we're not going to be makel to that extent. And say that the mikveh should be kosher, even though the water flows through it. So, in other words, like you're taking away the whole concept of Mayim Shuvim passing a mikveh in the first place. So all told, yes, we can say that Braisa goes according to the Chacham. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it wouldn't make a difference. Once it's attached to the ground, then it's bottled. The Chacham are going to say like this. If it was first a keli, we still want to uphold the gzera of Mayim Shuvim, and therefore we're going to say that it passes it even though it's attached to the ground. But when it was attached to the ground and only then shaped into a keli, then the Chum are going to say, fine, listen, the whole issue was only Dirabbanan anyway, and it was never a keli until it was attached to the ground, so it'll still be very clear there is an issue of Mayim Shuvim, and therefore we can be makel on this case, and it's not going to interfere with that tekon. Okay, So that's the bottom line. That braisa is according to the Chachamim, the halacha is like it, and therefore you do have that distinction of kavoy l'vasef chakokoi or chakokoi l'vasef kavoy in terms of the kashrus of a pipe for use to transfer water into a mikvah. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to deal with, now let's get back to, we talked about in the Mishnah, a case of where you have a millstone, you have a grinding mill in a house composed of two stones that rotate one on top of the other. And we said you have a section of that whole contraption, you have a section of the Mishnah called the Tzroivil, which we said, The Rashbam had defined it as a round thing that's a round platform that you put the millstones on top of. And like we learned yesterday, there's a couple of different explanations among the Rishonim what the Yitzhoyvel is. But now the Gemara is going to deal with, as far as this matter of things that were attached and now are detached and now are attached to the ground, as far as another aspect of the dinim of Tumah V'Tameh. Now, we know that in order for food to become tame, it has to become wet with one of the shiva mashkim. And in addition, it has to be that liquid was detached from it. Let's say, for example, water. If you just have rainwater falls on something and you didn't want it to become wet, it's not going to be makabel tumah. The same way, for example, if something accidentally fell into a river and became wet, it's still not mukshel makabel tumah. It has to be that it became wet, lirotzen, that you wanted it to become wet. And you also have something like this. You can have where you wanted, for example, it's raining and you wanted the rain to fall on something for a certain purpose. And later on, once it fell on that, later on, that water then goes and falls on food. Is it makabel? Is the food now makabel tumah? Is it mukshel makabel tumah? So what we're saying is that so say for example, it's called mashka shetchilose l'rotzen. So for example, we're going to have over here that the Gemara is going to give the example. You wanted that when the rain falls, it should fall on that base, on that itzroivlin of the millstones to wash it, to clean it off. So that's considered l'rotzen. You wanted that rain to fall on it. Now, if later on some of that rain then drips off and falls on food, that's not necessarily l'rotzen. You didn't want that to happen. Nevertheless, it could be machshu at l'kabel tumah. So now that's the question. So boy, Rabbi Yosef, make shomim shechkishav aleim la'adiyach haseit tzroivlin. If it was raining and you wanted the rain to wash off the tzroivlin, which is attached to the base of the millstones, which is attached to the ground. Mahu lezroim, what would be the din of that same water if now it goes and falls on food? The point of the question is basically, is the itzroivlin considered a keli or not? If it's considered part of the ground, then we would say, that the water that fell there is not yet machshir unless you wanted it to fall on the food. On the other hand, if you say the itzroivlin itself is considered a keli, then you would say that once it fell on a keli l'rotzen, then we don't care about the fact that later on when it fell on the food was shaloi l'rotzen. So that's Rabbi Yosef's question, and the question is like this. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who says, so what's the din as far as such rain, as far as whether it's machshu seeds or other kinds of food to be makabel tumah? The question can't be asked according to Rabbi Eliezer, since, as we just established, Rabbi Eliezer says that even when something was makabel tumah, like we said before about the daf shanach toimim that was made out of metal, Rabbi Eliezer holds once it's attached to the ground, it becomes part of the ground. Then, of course, it's considered attached to the ground. So the itzroivil was much more. It's a base that's attached to the ground, and the millstones sit on it. Even where we said that even when it comes to a mortar, even when it comes to a mortar which is often movable but sometimes attached to the ground, and Rabbi Eliezer was saying that it's considered part of the ground, how much more so the itzroivil, which to begin with is built on the ground and meant to stay there permanently. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no question. The itzroivil would be considered part of the karka. And therefore, when the rain falls on it, even though it's Lerotzen, it doesn't matter. What we need to know is what happens when the rain leaves that karka and falls on something else. Is that Lerotzen? And here we're talking about it's not, because you didn't necessarily want this food to get wet. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no question that this water would not be machshir the food lekabel tumah. So the Rashbam gives the explanation that in general the question is not just about the tsroivel but anything else that was originally detached from the ground and later on attached. That Tosfos says that in that case, why are you talking about an tsroivel specifically and several other questions? And so Tosfos says really the question is. The question is based on what we just said about the daf shel nachtoim. Maybe you could say that the itzroivel maybe is more reason. There's more reason than anything else to say that it's bottled to the ground. And therefore we're then, or maybe not. Maybe insofar as this din, then we would say it's one thing when you're selling it, for example, mocha ba'ein yof mocha, but not, for example, the itzroivel. Is maybe the itzroivel, yes, it's attached to the ground, but it is something that could more easily be taken off the ground and detached from it more than a wall. So maybe the Chachamim would have reason to say that even though now it was built onto the ground to begin with and it's attached, but it's much easier to detach from the ground than a wall. So maybe it would be considered a cave. So that's the question. For example, that the board used by the baker is not considered like the karka, even when it's attached to the wall. Maybe they would say the same thing by the itzroivel, or maybe not. So, what would be the din? And the answer is teiku. We can't be sure what the chachamim would hold in that case. Okay. The Gemara finishes off. Shalach le Reb Nechemya b'rei Reb Yosef l'Rabba b'rei Reb Huna zuti l'nahavda. Reb Nechemya. So now one more thing, that the Gemara is going to deal with as far as this case of Tolosh or Sof Chibroi, something that was originally detached from the ground, and now you attached it, and we have this whole discussion that we've had over this whole daf, whether it's considered like Kauka or not. So here's another area where that point is relevant. We learned back in Masech Tuksubas, and we talked about it sporadically here and there, that you have a Takana of the Chachamim that when a father passes away before his daughter was getting married, then of course, when there are sons and daughters, only the sons inherit the estate. But midrabanan, there's a certain amount of the estate has to be earmarked for her parnasa, for her wedding expenses. And that we said there's different ways of figuring out what that is. The default is isu nechasim, one tenth of his nechasim is earmarked for that. And specifically, one tenth of his nechosim, calculating based on the karka, not based on the talpman. She doesn't have the shibud on the talpman for this purpose. Later on, in the times of the goyim, when it became less common for Jews to own land, then they made a takana that for many purposes in halacha, the talpman are also considered like karka. But right now, we're talking according to the din of the Gemara, where this isu nechosim, this one tenth that's earmarked for her parnasa, for her wedding expenses, is davka from karka. Well, so the question is going to be, about this kind of thing, tolo shalo sof schibroi, what is considered to be karka for this purpose. So sholach le Reb Nechemya, b'rei Reb Yosef, so Reb Nechemya, the son of Reb Yosef, sent a message, le Rabba, b'rei Reb Huna Zuti, to Rabba, the son of Reb Huna Zuti, so perhaps this is not the regular Reb Huna, but rather a different one. Anyway, le Nahavda, he sent a message to him in Nahavda with the following din. He tells you when this particular woman comes to you and she wants to claim an isu nechosim from her father's estate. So the pashtus, she had first come to Reb Nechemya to get the psak din, and now she's going to be going to Nahavda where the estate is located. So therefore, he's telling Rabbi Bered Reb Huna, you who are in Nahavda, you see to it, the matter gets taken care of. Agba isu nichsi afilu meitz droivli derechai. Make sure that she gets her isu nechosim even from the itzroivel of the millstone. So in other words, to that extent, we're going to say that the, that uh, we're going to say that that it's Tzroivel is considered like the ground which it comes out from. That says Rashbam in the name of Rabbeinu Hananel. Apparently, then it means the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. As far as that, that's considered like part of the ground. So she's entitled to that 10%. And if the only way to raise some of that 10% is by selling the Tzroivel on top of which the millstones sit, then yes, go ahead and do that, because that Tzroivel is considered like the karka because it's attached to the ground. And the Gemara continues, Omer Avashi, Ki Havenan Bei Rav Kahana, when we were Talmidim by Rav Kahana, Magbinan Afilu Ma'amola Debati, we learned over there and we used to paskin in the Beis Din that she's entitled to collect even from the 10%, the Isur Nechosim, even from rentals of houses. Because the houses themselves, of course, are Mechobel LaKarka, and therefore the rental fee for the house is also considered like Karka, and she's entitled to collect part of her 10% from that. Tosfos discusses the question, are we talking about that the brother's already collected the rent, and it's Metalkalin, why should she be able to collect from that? If we're talking about that she's able to take one of the houses that her father left in as an estate and rent it out and use the rent towards her parnosa, then of course there's no chiddush in that. If she can sell the house because it's karka, then certainly she could rent it. So Tosfos says, we're talking about, let's say the house was rented out for a year, half the year, part of the year has already passed. And now we're saying that not only can she collect the rent from now on towards her Issur Nechosim, she would even be entitled to collect the back rent from the last 6 months and use it towards her parnasa, because schirus einu mishtalemus ela l'soif, the din is in halacha that when you rent something, it's only payable at the end. So even though the tenants may have been so the tenants technically are not chayev in the rent until the end of the term, and therefore it's considered karka for that purpose. Rav Ashi says, and therefore she'd be able to collect even from that, because it's still considered part of the karka. So the point is, in other words, so that's a side point, but the point is that we see from Reb Nechemia's statement that yes, like Rabbi Eliezer had said, something that was detached from the ground and now is attached is considered like karka, and therefore the tzroivelin, which starts out as wood or whatever it is that they build the frame out of, and then it's attached to the ground, it now becomes like the ground, and therefore it has that implication as far as Issur Nechosim that she can collect from. As far as other dinim, we don't necessarily say that. So it would still be Makabel Tumah, and it would still have the various other dinim that we discussed before.